Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. And this is a special episode. We are recording this 2 days after the Trumpist insurrection that breached the sacred halls of the Capitol building. You know, I say sacred halls, but various people have talked about that. It's not specifically religious, but it is what we have in our culture, in American culture, as a kind of secular sacred space. And that was very much breached in this. And this has been difficult. And so we decided we're going to do a podcast where we'll speak from the heart and, you know, take it from there. So, Judy, let me turn it over to you. What are some of the things that you've been thinking and feeling in the last couple of days?
Well, you know, you mentioned sacred space, and I wanted to, I was thinking about when I have visited the Capitol. And the first time I went to Washington, D.C., I was 7 years old, and my grandparents took me and my sister Debbie. And, you walk in that space, and there's a feeling of awe. And even as a 7-year-old, I knew it was something very special. And I've been there several times over the years. And every time, you know, you do get a sense of awe in this place. This is where our, it represents our country, our principles. And even if we don't always live up to our principles, at least we have an aspiration. And yesterday or 2 days ago, watching that being violated so violently and so crassly, I told you yesterday, I spent the morning crying. It was very difficult for me to see that our country has come to this, that our citizens are acting, you know, like animals, like terrorists. And people didn't want to use that word, you know, and I think more people are using that word now. It was sheer terrorism. And it wasn't like, you know, you and I were around in the 60s when people were protesting. And, you know, it wasn't a pretty picture, a lot of those protests. But I don't think anybody ever went into the Capitol building like that and smashed it and just tore down everything of democracy and mocked all of our leaders by going into their offices and putting their feet up. And it was just disgusting. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, and in that very sense, it was a violation of sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, when we've talked about this all through the whole last 4 years of Trump being president, much as it will not be a surprise to listeners of this podcast that both of us are very much opposed to Trump and basically everything he stood for. I have always yet maintained, and I'm even going to apply that to this current situation, a lot of the people who were involved in that mob, it was a mob, and that needs to be stopped, mm-hmm. and they need to be sanctioned. But a lot of the people who were involved in that mob were sincerely thinking that they were defending democracy.
Mm-hmm.
They're wrong. This is where I need to be absolutely clear. They're wrong about that. And this isn't a time to say, well, let's understand their concerns. They're flat wrong. They're deluded. But they're sincere. And if we're going to heal, it's going to be about sincerely, first of all, addressing the ways that they are wrong. This is not something where, well, you can see it a couple of different ways. No, they were deluded by lies from the President of the United States and mm-hmm. his enablers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the people who were doing this were sincere. I saw a post this morning from somebody who's apologizing for his role in it, saying he deeply regretted it. We were talking about this about Betsy DeVos, who resigned. And I mean, you can speak for yourself, but I will quote you because it's a good point. You know, you were saying you were looking at her resignation and maybe Elaine Chao also who's married to Mitch McConnell actually, mm-hmm. their resignations as cabinet secretaries as a way of avoiding their having to do anything about the 25th Amendment. But I was saying, I've said to you, and I'll say in this podcast, I take that. You know, when Betsy DeVos wrote that the inflection point for her was the president's rhetoric, I take her at her word. I think that's sincere. Much as I have disagreed with how she has run her department and disagreed politically with what she has done, I would say that what she's doing is an act of, is a principled act. And I think we need to welcome that. I saw actually one of the reactions from someone in one of the national teachers unions, I think, if I'm remembering right, who've always been very much opposed to what Betsy DeVos was doing, nevertheless gave her credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the way forward in terms of healing, and you know what, I want to back up for a second, because let's situate this in our podcast. As listeners, regular listeners to our podcast will know, this is couples therapy in 7 words, we call it, and we base it on the formula that I used in my book. The name of the book is Reigniting the Spark. And the 7 words of the formula are be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And we use that, I use it in the book, and we've used it in this podcast as a way of structuring our understanding of how to help couples heal. And what I want to note again, I say again because we did this right after the election too, is that same set of principles I think can help us as a nation heal. That part of what needs to happen, that sense of kinship, which is what I mean by be kind, I mean be kin. The recognition that we are kin, even when we differ hugely on political issues or even moral issues, the sense that we're still kin is what we're going to need to do to be able to heal this country. And I, you know, you maybe you can hear in how I've just been talking about it, the rage I feel, the anger I feel is on the one hand, I have that. And on the other hand, there's this other part of me that feels like we have to find ways toward reconciliation. I just want to add one more thing in my little speech here, and then you please comment, that as a Jew, part of this gets to me deeply as a Jew, the kind of lies and, you know, there were people there, again, judging by some stuff, some news I read about this morning, there were people in the mob who had nooses, or at least one person was seen with a noose. There were a Reuters photographer was quoted as saying he heard at least 3 rioters say that their intention was to get a hold of Vice President Pence and string him up and hang him, you know, lynch him, basically. And as a Jew, it of course, it scares me and it fills me with rage. And yet, you know, that guy who posted saying that he's deeply sorry for having been swept away by this, and he, you know, he went in and he shouldn't have gone in, and he, you know, he feels, and he wasn't offering any excuses. We need to find ways of being able to hear that and accept that as well. And I don't know how to wrestle with that at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, it's you know, as a Jew, because we are a minority and have been persecuted. And, you know, the same images popped into my mind, seeing the mob scene on Capitol Hill, that, as other people have pointed out, were this a Black Lives Matter protest? You know, first of all, at the Black Lives Matter protest, there was so many more militia staged around the Capitol. There were, it was just, let me get back to my point. Were this a Black Lives Matter, you know, bullets would have been flying left and right. And
they never would have gotten in.
No, they never would have gotten in. This would not have been tolerated. And the fact that they were all over Capitol Hill waving Confederate flags, it just points out the divide in our nation, and wearing a sweatshirt that says Camp Auschwitz.
Yeah.
You know, these images are so offensive to me and like to thinking human beings. I just can't believe it. You know, the hatred that these people have toward Jews and blacks and minorities and Muslims, and that whole mentality of taking the country back to a white supremacist nation is very scary. It's very scary.
It is. And I think some people have pointed out, I think quite wisely, that, and I've said this, you've said this, we've talked about this over the last few years. It's not as if any of the white supremacy stuff is new.
No.
It's not like it ever went away. It's not like the stuff that produced Nazism and produced some very similar movements in this country ever went away. They're still there. And there has to be an awakening. And, you know, I am heartened in the midst of my rage. I am heartened by what I see as a new awakening here. You know, I was looking at some posts this morning, and one of the 538 posted an article, reposted an article that they had posted back in October of 2019 when the impeachment, the first impeachment, was starting to gather momentum. And they were saying that if Republicans are going to turn on Trump, it'll happen all at once. And that does, to some extent, seem to be happening. Yeah. Not, frankly, to enough of an extent, but to some extent. And, you know, I've often said, you know, again, the rage part of me says that party needs to disappear. And there are actually a lot of Republicans mm-hmm. who are saying we need to create a new party right. because this one's broken. Right. I also but I feel like whatever they call it, you know, I tend to come more from the liberal perspective politically, though I'm quite a traditionalist, as you know. So I have that conservative streak in me as well. But that sense that there needs to be a viable center-right party mm-hmm. is important to our democracy. And so that, you know, if the Republican Party can be remade, that's fine. If there has to be a new party, well, okay. But I worry about the fact that there's still a huge number of people who are still loyal to Trump thinking that that is somehow being a loyal Republican.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, 20 years ago, our senator from Vermont, Jim Jeffords, left the Republican Party, he to become an independent, or as he said, the Republican Party left him. Mm-hmm. And so it's been going on for a long time. I think the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin debacle have all been moving the Republican Party in a very, very fundamentalist direction. And I think a lot of Republicans are feeling frustrated. You know, we've got the Lincoln Project that seems to be a little bit more of moderate Republican. So maybe that'll pan out into something. But, you know, in listening to all the stuff that's been going on, I think a good leader is what we need now. Somebody that can help our, you know, to mollify some of the anger that's going on and the frustration in our nation. You know, when you think about Robert Kennedy giving his speech following Martin Luther King's assassination, I'm going to cry. You know how, I forgot which city he was in.
You got me going. Too.
But, you know, that was one of the few towns in which there weren't riots. And that shows what a good leader can do. And yeah. I just hope Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are those leaders for our times.
That is one of the things that I've taken some comfort in the last couple of days. And again, I didn't read an article, but I saw some tweet that where the headline was basically saying the same idea, that this is changing the start of this new administration in ways I am hopeful about, you know, that Biden's whole brand has been, we are not going to demonize each other. Mm-hmm. You know, he has said that repeatedly, that when he's disagreed with people, really passionately disagreed with people, he still doesn't go after somebody's character. Right. He'll just say, all right, let's work together and figure this out. And that is what we need. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that that will be happening. But, you know, it's a national trauma we're dealing with here. And that's, I can feel it in my own gut. Do you know that mm-hmm. that combination of there's this part of my brain that isn't able to think, and then there's the part of me there where I can sort of get hold of myself and, you know, reflect on it a bit. I want to actually turn it to the formula here, not to be sort of obsessive about the formula, but, you know, be kind, don't panic, and have faith. What I'm noticing is panic is really hard. That's what's grabbing me. That sense of rage is a kind of panic.
I think that's, you know, what we've all been in the past few days is a panic mode.
And the solution, the antidote to panic is faith. Mm. And I have to somehow find that consciousness of faith. And, you know, the way I've defined faith, as I write about in the book, the way I define faith is when you accept that reality is right to be what it is.
Well, you know, that's good. And I think many people do accept reality is right. But what do you say about the people that live in an alternate reality? When you have somebody like Ted Cruz, the Harvard-educated Ted Cruz, saying this election was rigged. Like, what reality is he living in? How can you have faith in somebody that's preaching to these people and saying reality is right when they're in this alternate reality where what they're hearing and believing is that everything is wrong and it's everything is against them.
Yeah, the to say that reality, you know, accept that reality is right doesn't mean that facts don't matter. Facts do matter. Do you know what I mean? He's saying the election was rigged is a craven lie on his part. He knows better than that. He knows perfectly well that the stuff that he's peddling is nonsense.
So then why isn't he being held accountable?
Well, we collectively are trying to hold him accountable. And the trouble is there's lots of people who, because they feel tribally associated with him, you know, he's a jerk, but he's our jerk. You know, that's the way a lot of people will feel about it. So the part when I say, well, how do I find faith in the midst of that? Look, this is a pretty extreme way of saying it, but I apply this to, you know, Germany becoming Nazi. It wasn't right in any moral sense that they did that. It was wrong. There needed to be a war to stop them. And I'm not a pacifist with respect to that. So I'm not saying, oh, you just accept whatever anybody thinks. Not at all. Sometimes you have to be, you know, you have to fight a war about it. I am saying that even then, it was coming from somewhere deeply human. You know, it was, I keep referring to that guy I saw this morning who was apologizing for being part of the mob. People are moved by passions that are there for good reason. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And even people who would fall for the crap that people like Cruz, you can tell, I don't know what to do with Cruz because I think he's a craven liar. That's, you know, and I say craven in the sense of cowardly. That's what that means. Mm-hmm. That he's not actually, doesn't have enough principle to actually stand up for truth. But there are many, many, many people, and I'm not trying to say, oh, they're just stupid people being duped. No, they're intelligent people being duped because it is associated with a tribal sense. So, you know, the manipulators, I think, you know, people like Cruz, he just needs to be shamed and shunned. But many, many, many people of good faith are greatly concerned by what they're greatly concerned by. So we should go ahead and have the arguments. But the faith I'm saying is that, no, there is something important. You know, it's one of the ways we may have talked about it in our podcast we did right after the election. The idea that reality's right includes our tendencies to hate as well as to love. I'm not saying it's good to hate. It isn't good, but it's natural. Mm-hmm. You know, it's part of the deal. We got to work with it. The people who recant white supremacism, mm-hmm. you know, we've read about folks like that.
Sure.
Which I find moving, you know? Mm-hmm. They're raised in a certain way with certain assumptions, and they come to find out that it's wrong. Well, the way the stories I've read and heard about, it's not from people yelling at them. It's from people treating them like people. It's from people saying, look, you came by your frankly wrong beliefs. Naturally, understandably, it's like, yeah, that's what you were raised with.
Right.
That's how you view things. You're not unintelligent. You are, in fact, misinformed. We're going to have to argue about that. But you're not unintelligent. You're not invalid as a person. And that experience is what tends to invite people to reevaluate when they are flat out wrong. And look, I've been wrong. You've been wrong. I mean, you know, we know what it feels like to be wrong. And what it feels like to have some kind of awakening about that and about one thing or another. And I think that's what needs to happen. But I think it's faith that will bring that about, you know, the ability to accept people's validity even when you're feeling really angry.
So we've been talking about this in a macrocosm. How do you see this as a therapist playing out in the microcosm with couples that you deal with? I mean, it's only been a couple of days since all this, but how do you feel? What are you seeing or hearing from couples that you're working with?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it's only literally been one day of work. You know, today's Friday, and I'm not seeing clients today, and I saw clients yesterday. And so it was only one day. It didn't particularly come up with the particular people I was talking about. But for the last at least 4 years, I have noted numbers of couples where this tribal difference has got between them, where one of the members of the couple, I can leap to a stereotype and say it's almost always the guy who's the Trumpist guy. I'm trying to think if I've seen any couples where it's the other way around. There's certainly plenty of women who were into Trumpism, but the ones I've seen, it's usually a man who's into Trumpism and a woman who's finding it appalling. And it has approached for many of the couples I've worked with the level of deal breaker. It's like, you know, women have said, if you can't see what an awful person this guy is, and often that one's about the fact of his having been a serial sexual abuser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't see that, if you can't see that that means I can't possibly respect him as my president, then how can I be married to you? How can mm-hmm. I trust you? Mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting, that some of the men in that situation have said, I understand that. I'm just not coming from that same place. My family's always been Republican. You know, I've always had this sort of sense of, yeah, these liberals are, you know, kind of elitist, and they're talking down the flag and talking down our military, and it gets under my skin. I came from a military family. You know, those are the kinds of things I hear. I can understand it. It's like, yeah, I see why you have that problem. So it does come up with couples, and sometimes they manage to do okay when they start hearing each other enough to recognize they're probably not quite as far apart as they think. Do you know what I mean? It's like, wow, we come down into these different political tribes, but in between, we actually share a fair amount of value, and then they can be okay with it.
Mm.
But it's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's not.
It's when it triggers fear. Do you know what I mean? It's the don't panic part. It's when somebody feels like, oh my God, you're scaring me with how you're understanding this. That's when it tends to really get people questioning if they can manage to stay together or not.
So if you have some feedback or some opinions that you'd like to express about what's going on, we certainly would welcome your emails. So you can write to us at bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com, and there's a place on the website where you can leave feedback.
And if you go to the podcast tab, that's where you can hear all of the various podcasts we've done. And you can also nominate yourself or someone else to be interviewed on the program, because we're always looking for people to interview. So I just want to offer my wishes to us all, sort of in the form of a blessing, you know, that may we learn from this. May we grow from this. You know, may this be the kind of crisis, as many traumas are for mm-hmm. many couples I work with, that leads us to look back on it and say, wow, that was painful, but we benefited from it. You know, we learned enough from this that it makes the future better. And I just want to offer that hope and that blessing to us all.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I second that. And, you know, I just want to say, and our parting words are, be kind, don't panic, and this week especially, have faith.